This is Phil Farron.
Other way, Phil.
And I am driving home. So, yeah, so first of all, I hit the button and then I was just daydreaming and I was like, wait, we're recording now. I should go ahead and say something. And then I couldn't get the key in the slot the right way and it wouldn't turn, but you know what? We're getting there. We're getting there. Let's see. Need to get turned around here. I'm going to make a side stop. Going to make a side stop here. Run into Whataburger and order 4 beef patties so I can eat those when I get home. Because it's going to be about time to go get Aiden by the time I get home, so I'll gobble those down. It would be nice to go out and lay out in the sun, but there is no sun today. Today is overcast, but man, it's a gorgeous day from a temperature perspective. For August, it's unbelievably gorgeous. Because it's in the 70s. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. So anyways, been a good week. Been an exciting week. Did Angel Day last weekend. That costume's a little physically demanding, but people really love it. I had to make some adjustments on it because it looked like the battle angel was losing some of its feathers. But what was happening is the string that stretches the feathers out, the big feathers that are just manufactured from wire and from cloth and construction adhesive, for some reason that line had loosened up over time, and so I was getting gaps in the feathers, so I had to go ahead and get that tightened up and squared away so that it would open better. And people love that angel costume. Just get all kinds of questions, get all kinds of cold opens from people coming up going, so what's the, you know, there was a young lady that I was heading out and she just tucked in beside me and she said, okay, I have to know, why do you have a jetpack if you're an angel? And I said, well, it's Be an Angel Day, and they didn't say what kind of angel, and I just decided that I wanted to be a steampunk battle angel. And, you know, I can imagine that a jetpack would give you a little more maneuverability when you're going to battle. And she said, well, that's true. So we had a real nice little quick conversation and then headed out. So the wings are hung up for another year now, and we're pretty much coasting for the rest of the year. Have some newer costumes for the rest of the year that I built last year that are fun. So there's Wonderful Weirdos Day coming up that's new. There's No Shave November, which is a Cousin It costume. That's fun. So some of those new ones are coming up. When is Tell a Fairy Tale Day? I think that's in the fall too. So that's a fun costume. That's the one where I did the puppet stage with the Princess Bride. It's very cute. And people seem to really like that costume. This weekend is a duel, and they're both in the past because of the way the days fell. Everything fell weird this year. So this weekend is International Dog Day. And then it's also National Bowtie Day, and both of them will be a couple of days before. But, you know, people don't care. They don't look it up. They don't know. And I have to get in my little thing where I raise awareness for the plight of the standard poodle who has suffered the indignities of the continental cut. That's why we say pom-pom poodles. Live the nightmare every day. Hashtag no pants. So that's fun. So we're doing that this weekend. Simultaneously, I am on the run now to get my Star Trek costume done. But I finished my mock-up Tuesday and got the zipper installed and all that kind of stuff and put it on, and it's sized correctly, so it's good. Now I just have to redo it in the real material, which is jumbo spandex, which is expensive. So I'm cutting the real material now, and just got the first three pieces cut last night just before I went to bed. And I've done all the research, and I did a sample seam, and sure enough, seems to work. You know, there are special stretch needles that you get for sewing spandex when you aren't using a serger. It's a different thing when you're using a serger, but, and I have a serger that my mother-in-law gave me, but the construction, that guide that I'm going by, was just using a regular sewing machine. So I am using the regular sewing machine, but I went and looked through all the tricks, and so you have a special needle that's for stretch garments. You use polyester thread that has some give to it, and then you use a walking foot. And I put all those things together. You can also pre-stretch just manually, but the walking foot, since the garment isn't going to be under a lot of stress, the walking foot just seemed like a better idea, and it was. It laid down a beautiful seam, pressed open beautifully, and so I know what I'm doing now, I think. I've done it once on cheapo material, so now we're going to try it on the good stuff. So I sew my first big seam tonight, and then just keep cutting and keep sewing. It's an interesting design. I may have mentioned this before, but it is an interesting design because it's meant for shooting a television series, and so it's not necessarily meant for everyday wear, and so there's some things that you'd consider inconvenient. And a little odd in its construction, but it's so that when you're, you know, shooting the footage and things, everything kind of stays in place. So that, you know, that makes it interesting. And you know, it makes it more authentic as well, because the pattern that I'm using was generated off of a uniform that was used on screen for TNG. There's like one funky thing with zippers and things that I didn't do. I just went to a standard back zipper. But aside from that, it's authentic. So this will be fun. It'll be fun to do, and you know, hopefully it'll turn out, look good. I was a little bit worried when I was getting towards the end because things looked a little frumpy and ruffly and not really sitting, but man, as soon as I put it on, everything just kind of, you know, flattened out. Okay, I've pulled into Whataburger here, so I'm going to have to stop talking a little bit while I order, and then we'll start back up again. So the costume's going fine. It looks like it's all, you know, right size, right time. One moment, I'll be right back.
Welcome to Town Whataburger. My name is Richard. Are you currently a Whataburger at Rewards member?
I am not.
What can I get you started today?
I need 4 hamburger patties. Just the bare patties. I don't need the buns or anything like that. Just 4 hamburger patties. And I will be...
The big ones?
Big ones.
Gotcha. Anything else for you?
That'll be it.
What's a good name?
Philip.
You said no one?
Philip.
Okay. It's going to be 1077 second window.
Okay? All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so writing is going fine. I'm right on track to finish up this weekend. And I think I know where I'm going, and I think I know everything I have to write, and I know what's happening in the epilogue. I'm still a little... I'm not settled yet. I think I know what the fairy tale is. Nursery rhyme, I should say. Nursery rhyme fairy tale for the book. I'm not sure, though. And that impacts what the cover is supposed to look like. So I don't quite have that nailed down yet. But, you know, right place, right time. We'll be all right. I've got 2 weeks worth of read-through to do to do a final read through on the book. So there's, you know, there's time to get that in place. But I think all in all, it's going to do what it needs to do. And, you know, it sets me up for where I need to be on book 24. I typically, when I'm writing these books, I will make it so that anyone could pick up any book and at least have a fighting chance of knowing what's going on, because I don't just assume that someone reading this book knows exactly what happened in all of the other books. I do have synopses of the other books at the front of the book, so you can kind of get caught up that way, but obviously those are a half-page synopsis for a 450-page book. You can't cover everything, but I'm constantly doing callbacks in the book to contextualize what the character is doing because of what they've been through in the past. You know, so because I'm contextualizing it that way, I usually, when I'm getting into one of those sections that's contextualized for something that has happened in the past, I just recap what had happened in the past just quickly. I was thinking maybe I wouldn't do that for book 24 because, you know, if you're going to read a book series, you probably don't want to just jump in at book 24. But humans will do that. They will. They're like, you know, if they would hear about this and become intrigued at all, it's like, well, maybe I'll just read the last book to decide if I want to read all the other books. You know, so because of that, I think you pretty much have to give people a fighting chance that if they just jump on in on book 24, and I've done it on all the other books, much to the chagrin of some of my beta readers, because they don't see the point in that. You know, their kind of viewpoint is either you're going to read the book series or you're not. But at the same time, I've had other beta readers tell me, you know, I'm really glad you put those in there because it's been 6 months since I've read this book and I forgot a bunch of the stuff that happened in it. And by you putting reminders in the next book, it helps me get caught up. And so I tell that to the other beta readers and they kind of look at me like, but, you know, you can't please everybody all the time. So that's good. And it's getting, you know, it's getting exciting that we're close. We're close. I just got to finish up book 22, give people their hero movement moments, and maybe kill a bunch of people off. And, you know, then the series will be done. So it's been really good. I've really, really enjoyed it. You know, it's been a push, obviously. And it's been something that I have put a lot of time into. And there's a whole bunch of people that would look at me cross-eyed when they say, oh, how many books do you sell? And I say, oh, none. And then they look at me like, what? It's like, yeah, no. That's not the point. The point is to tell a story. The point is to resolve some things in my own mind about how to conduct myself in the world. And in resolving those in my own mind, it helps me live better. And it helps me deal with those things that you have that are delusions, you know, great and small. Because we all kind of carry expectations in our minds about how the world functions and what it would be like if ... whatever if is. And it's really hard to convince yourself that some of those delusions are not true. It's like the classic delusion of someone who might say, who was a man, who might say, well, I just feel like a woman, and so I must be a woman. And it's very hard to convince someone otherwise who might be convinced of that. I'm getting ready to pull up to the window. I'll be back with you in just a moment.
Four large beef with 1077.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Have a great day. Well, that was quicker than it has been in the past. Yay. So that worked out good. So anyways, what the writing does for me is that it allows me to take characters, put them in situations, and then say, okay, well, how is this character going to react to this? And then what are the consequences of that? And I try to be as honest about those consequences as I can, because that then gives me the ability to test things out. You know, if I was in a situation, what would I do in that situation, and what could I expect as consequences of what I was doing in that situation? And so this 24 book series has actually allowed me to just kind of role play and test out a tremendous amount of scenarios in all kinds of different situations with all kinds of personality types. And I think it's been really beneficial for me to pay attention to all of that and to give it a trial run. So it's been good. It's been good. Now that I am looking forward to finishing this up, because this is probably going to be the last big, you know, speed writing thing that I will ever do. I will certainly take longer with books that I do in the future. I will slow down, definitely. And I think, and will edit more, you know, to sort of refine things to make sure that the words that are on the page are the appropriate words and in the correct sequences and like that. And so I'm looking forward to that as well. But definitely this has been a worthwhile endeavor. And, you know, the old trope is that you have to spend 10,000 hours doing a thing before you develop some expertise in it. Well, and when I'm in these writing sprints, I'm easily putting in 20 hours a week. And to get a book written, there's 16 weeks of that. So 16 weeks of 20 hours a week is what? 320 hours? Is that right? Or is it 3,200? Wait. 10 times 20 would be 200. So 16 times 20 would be 320 hours. So now you take that 320 hours and you multiply it by 24, and that 320 hours turns into 6,400 hours plus however much more. Another 1,200-ish or so. So I'm up, you know, 7,500 hours. Wow, it seems like there should be more than that. I don't know. Anyways, if it's not 10,000 hours that I have spent on the series, it should be close. Plus, I've spent time. You know, I spent 5 years working on my first novel, so certainly there's 10,000 hours worth there. And I hope the whole process has left me a better writer. We'll see. We'll see. So, I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast with a historian. I should say a young man who has a degree in ancient history, who had done some just pretty interesting podcast about things. He caught Joe Rogan's ear, and so he was on the Joe Rogan podcast. And in the process of them talking about all these kind of ancient mysteries and weird stuff, and Joe Rogan actually brought up this topic, and I thought, what? You know, and it's like, but I did go and I did listen through the YouTube video. I'm always interested when people huff and puff and just dismiss things out of hand and say, oh, that couldn't have ever happened, and blah, 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 blah. I like to go look for myself, because I have found that if I go look for myself, that a lot of times, I go, you know, I don't think we can dismiss that this easily. So, in Peru, there is supposedly, and you have to understand that Peru is a third world country, and so it is going to have very poor people in it. And there was like a sheep herder or something, you know, very poor person, who stumbled upon this cave that supposedly had multiple instances of humanoid, smaller humanoid creatures that were mummified because of the dirt, and that they named the type of dirt is that it desiccates, you know, it dries things out. And they found a lot of these mummies in this cave, and when they started bringing them out, they were very odd looking. For one thing, they had three fingers on each hand and three toes on each foot. And apparently there have been some people who have been mocking up copies of them, and then some people reviewed the copies as if they were the originals, and then immediately claimed that it was all just fake. And then, of course, the whole ridicule machine started up, and everybody talks about how stupid other people are to believe that those are actually real, except at the same time, the real corpses are being x-rayed and being put through CAT scans and that sort of thing, and they have full skeletons underneath the skin. One of them actually appears to be carrying a fetus that appears to have three fingers and three toes as well, and an elongated head. And of course, the big question is, what in the world are these? You know, are these some branch line of humanoids that we haven't known about in the past? Are they quote-unquote extraterrestrials? And so there's obviously a lot of discussion, but only in certain quarters, because the rest of the mainstream has decided that this is all just a hoax, because there was some fakes that were made and pictures of the fakes got into the news, and everybody jumped on that to just outright dismiss anything that might be associated. It's just always interesting to watch this progression, where you've got this whole cluster of people who are just waiting to ridicule anything that doesn't fit within the lines. So I don't know, if you want to go and watch the documentary on this, the documentary is called Alien Mummies in Peru. It's on YouTube. It's by Jesse Michaels, M-I-C-H-E-L-S, J-E-S-S-E. So they're known as the Nazca monkeys, Nazca mummies, and there's three types of them. And even Jesse Michaels said that, you know, one of the types he's not too sure of. It seems like those are just fakes. But there is one of the types of which they have very few bodies, but they nonetheless do have bodies. And that type has been, they have done CAT scans on it, and bones and organs, you know, everything shows up just like it would on a natural body. So, you know, what does that tell us? I mean, there's and they do show the CAT scans on the documentary. And when you see all the bones and how everything is formed and stuff, you look at that and go, man, that would be a lot of work to build that all out to where that would show up like that on a CAT scan. And is that even feasible that some farmer would know how to do that? Of course, you know, maybe it wasn't the farmer that actually created them. Maybe it was some sort of a government psyop that was just doing this to, you know, whatever, bring ridicule. You know, who knows? Who knows? It is very, very interesting. And there are respected scientists, doctors who have looked at the CAT scans and said, look, we need to study this more. We need to do DNA analysis. We need to find out, you know, are these terrestrial? Are they extraterrestrial? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So some really interesting things with it. Now, at the same time, as I mentioned, it is a poor country. And so you've got people who are going to be interested in making as much money as they can off things like this. And supposedly the farmer or the herder or whatever has been taking people on tours to this cave since its discovery, except some people who went on the tours claimed that they didn't believe that was the real cave, that it was too small for the hundreds of bodies that were supposedly discovered inside it. And there is a very real possibility that, you know, the person who found the cave doesn't want anyone else to know where it is, and so he's not actually taking people to the cave, but he's willing to have them pay whatever, $3,000 to take them to a cave that he can then say, well, this is the cave, you know, this is where I found them. And who's to say, tell him that, no, this isn't where you found them. You know, it's just all kind of the standard human stuff. In addition, it appears that there are some fakes floating around. And this whole area of Peru is run by the cartels, which have a lot of money, and maybe the cartels are manufacturing fakes as well. The whole story gets very complicated. The Peruvian government has been trying to seize the bodies and take control of the whole thing. There's just a lot of interesting stuff involved. Now, there's also some very interesting people who are getting involved. The people who did the whole process where they supposedly resurrected the dire wolf, those geneticists supposedly have gotten involved, and maybe they're, if they can get access to the bodies, maybe they're going to take some samples and they're going to try to figure out, genetically, what are these things. I'm getting my mail, one moment. But, if these things prove out to be real, that certainly could have an impact, especially if they prove out to be a race that's a precursor to us as humans. Especially if they prove out to be a race that appears to be extraterrestrial. As part of that whole discussion, Joe Rogan was talking about the fact that he's been told that there have been discussions in the United States government for years about whether or not the information that the government supposedly has on extraterrestrials and UAP, UFO, as to whether or not they're real and whether or not we should declassify that information. Supposedly, one of the things that's been done is surveys are run and people are asked, okay, do you believe it would be beneficial or non-beneficial to release this information? Yada, yada, yada. And that routinely the answer comes back non-beneficial, because people are worried about how it would change people's perceptions of who they were and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. When you're in those types of situations, it's hard not to have your perceptions colored by what you want to happen, and whatever you want to happen is, that ends up being what everybody wants to happen. So it's interesting. I don't think that it would make any difference to me. God has a big family. And, I don't need him to only create life on Earth. And Jesus Christ is explosively creative. And if he created life on Earth, who's to say he didn't create life other places? I don't have any problem with that. So it's just going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see anything comes of this. I mean, it's amazing that more people are not actually talking about this. But we'll see. We'll see. There's a lot of things moving right now, and who knows where we're going to end up on a lot of this stuff. This is Phil Farron. I have made it home.